Haridas Thakur was Tatenukam Amsushamikshamano Bunjana Evatmakritam Vipaka. With folded hands he was praying and offering obeisances to the Lord, that I deserve so much worse, but because of your mercy I'm only getting this much. Let me surrender to you. Through the whole 22 marketplaces, Haridas Thakur was blissfully chanting the holy names. Many years later, in the house of Srivas Thakur, during the Mahaprakash Lila, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Haridas Thakur and actually revealed his divine opulences as the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna to Haridas. Upon seeing this darshan, Haridas Thakur fell unconscious in ecstasy. The Lord reminded Haridas of this beautiful pastime at Phulia. Do you remember, Haridas, when you were being beaten by those brutal demons through the 22 marketplaces? You were constantly chanting my names. At that time, I became so angry with those offenders that I descended from Vaikuntha with my Sudarshan Chakra and I was about to sever their heads. But I could not do it. Because while they were beating you and blaspheming you in public, the whole while, from the core of your heart, you were praying, my Lord, I only beg one benediction in my life. Please do not consider these men to be offenders. Please forgive them for whatever they do. Your power of compassion to forgive them was so great that it paralyzed my Sudarshan Chakra. So out of my love for you, I laid my own body on top of yours and I took all the beatings so that you would survive. Then the Lord opened his chatter and showed Haridas Thakur the brutal beatings that were meant for him on the beautiful golden body of Sri Gaurachandra. All the devotees assembled fell to the ground weeping, as did Haridas Thakur. So Srila Prabhupada explains that Haridas Thakur is the emblem of tolerance and forgiveness. We cannot imitate him, but we should pray from the very core of our hearts that we could follow in his footsteps. In our own lives, we're so disturbed by little, foolish, petty things that really don't have anything to do with reality. We become so angered by various situations that come upon us or different ways people act or people speak. Even Vaishnavas. We become vengeful, angry. Sometimes we even give up our devotional service. But if we want to actually be Vaishnava, we must be tolerant. We must be forgiving. Ninth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, it is explained that of all the qualities of a Brahman, forgiveness has prominence. This is a universal principle of religion. In Bible, Jesus was asked, if someone offends us, should we forgive them? In the scriptures it says we should. What if they offend us seven times? Jesus said, if they did offend you seven times seven, you must always forgive. And he practiced when he preached. When he was on that crucifix, being tortured and blasphemed, his prayer to the Lord was, please forgive them, they know not what they do. Therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, they say he was a Vaishnav. This is the quality of a Vaishnav. To tolerate any difficulty in our service and carry on and be eager to forgive. If we do not forgive others, Krishna will not forgive us. Krishna may take serious an offense created to a devotee, but the devotee will always think, I deserve so much worse. Thank you. That is Haridas Thakur. And we may be thinking that Haridas Thakur was Lord Brahma, who out of his humility took this role. So naturally he's tolerant and he's forgiving. But what about a conditioned soul trying to be Krishna conscious? In this regard, there's a beautiful narration. This is about a converted Vaishnav who demonstrated such glorious quality of tolerance and forgiveness because of his faith in his spiritual master. There was a Brahmin who was a devotee of Durga Devi. His name was Raghavendra Rai. And he had two sons, Santosh Rai and Chandra Rai. Now Chandra Rai became such a nefarious demon. He became king of dacoits. Due to his robbing and looting anyone he came in contact with, just in his house, he had 84,000 gold coins. Hare Krishna. He was expert at using weapons, and he loved to kill people. It's like some of you may know people who love to watch television or will love to watch movies. His entertainment was to torture and kill. He became so powerful. He conquered a whole palace called Raj Mahal. He had 5,000 infantrymen on foot and 5,000 infantrymen on horses. And he would just raid various towns and villages. Without discrimination, he would kill men, women, children with no regret. His lusty desires, he would forcibly rape even the wives of Brahmins, daughters of Brahmins, without discrimination, any pretty woman, he would just force them into sex. He was an abominable animal. He would burn people's houses down, and everything that was in a town, he would just steal it all and keep it for himself. His atrocities were so severe that if anyone were even speaking about the activities of Chandrai, the people would just hold their ears and run away. They couldn't even bear to hear about him. And in the whole country that he was living, tens and thousands of people in droves were just running for their lives to leave that area just because of him. He was really a demon. He was a devotee of Shakti, Durga. And he would make these big deities. And during festivals, he would offer tens and thousands of animals and sacrifice to them. And every day, every meal, he would be eating meat and fish and eggs. He was so sinful. Everyone was fearing their life 24 hours a day due to him. Chandragupta was asked by Yamaraj, please tell me, who is this Chandra Rai? He said, I can't explain. The only equals were Jagai and Madhai. But I think that Chandra Rai has surpassed both of them in his sins. How much we should punish him. Yamaraj, he said, just be patient. everything will happen by its natural course. So due to the sins of Chandrarai, he was possessed with a Brahmin ghost, Hare Krishna. This ghost was terrorizing him from within. When material nature, due to karma, wants you to suffer, there is nothing you can do to protect yourself. So this ghost was terrorizing him to such an extent, the ghost was actually beating him up from within and slashing him and stabbing him and just terrorizing him. And Chandrarai just totally lost his mind. He lost all of his luster. He lost all of his strength. He was just laying, rolling on the ground, suffering and suffering and suffering. What will his armies do? What will his great wealth do? He was totally defeated from within. And his father was dismayed to see his son in such a condition. It's the nature of a father or mother's love. He saw good in his son. So he called every possible doctor. And the doctors would come and they would say, there is a Brahmin Rakshasa ghost in him. There's nothing that we can do. So he called some astrologers. And one astrologer said, he's in the most miserable condition a man could possibly be. He's tormented. The only thing I could see that could save him is getting the mercy of a devotee of Krishna. And I know there's this Narottam Das Thakur. He's a great devotee. So father sent a message to Narottam Das Thakur. But the messenger understood what a sinful rascal he was. He was afraid to even approach Narottam, so the letter never got to him. So meanwhile, as his father saw that his son was actually on the verge of death, he prayed to Goddess Durga to save him, that you are the supreme. There's no one else in all of creation that can save him except you. Please save him. So right when Chandrarai was about to die, Durga appeared to him in a dream. She looked at him with such anger. She said, you are a demon, you are a rascal, and you call yourself my devotee. You've made yourself famous as being a great devotee of me, but I have never accepted a single offering that you have ever given to me. I am the compassionate mother of the universe. There is no sin, there is no crime that you have not committed to my children. You have killed, you have murdered, you have raped, you have plundered. You think that pleases me? No. Therefore, you are being tortured and you are being killed for your sins. I am the consort of Lord Shiva. And Shiva is the greatest of Vaishnavas. He will only take the prasad of Vishnu. And I am his maidservant. I will never accept anything except what he gives me. Therefore, you are rejected. There is only one hope, and that is that you take shelter of Krishna. Because Krishna is the all-powerful, all-merciful, supreme personality of Godhead. My service is simply carrying out his instructions in this universe. Myself and my consort Shiva are constantly chanting his names and glories and taking his prasad. I cannot save you for your sins. Only Krishna can save you. But there is no possibility of approaching Krishna except through his devotee. You should go to Narottam Das Thakur. He is a great devotee of Krishna. He's constantly hearing his glories, constantly serving his devotees, and constantly chanting his holy name.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Other than him, there is no shelter. So Chandrarai woke up and In a very faltering voice, he told his father about this dream. So father again sent message directly to Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur, he read message. He was with Ramchandra Kaviraj and some of his other devotees. He said, "What should I do?" And they said, "This Chandra Rai is the most sinful, demoniac murderer in history. But you are so merciful and you are such a loving personality that whatever you do is all right, but we don't know what you should do." So Narottam Das Thakur began to pray to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for direction. This is not an easy mission. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally appeared to Srila Narottam Das Thakur, this beautiful golden form, and spoke. He said, "Narottam Das, you are my devotee. You are empowered by my mercy. It will be no problem whatsoever for me to deliver this Chandra Rai through you. Therefore you go to him. I'll be with you. You should give him all your mercy. And you should initiate him and give him the name Krishna Das." Then Mahaprabhu disappeared. And Narottam, along with Ramchandra Kaviraj and some devotees, they began their journey from Keturigram. When they were on the outskirts of the town, they sent message. And Raghavendra Rai, the father, came. Actually, he decorated the entire city to welcome Narottam Das Thakur. There was bands playing and people dancing, and there was festoons and pots and flowers and garlands. All the wealth of the city they used to make a royal reception for Srila Narottam Das Thakur. But he didn't care for any of that. He was there for service. And then Raghavendra Rai, with all opulence, started offering him gifts and washing his feet. And Narottam just said, "Bring me to your son." Meanwhile, Chandra Rai was rolling on the ground in pain, just crying out for the mercy of Narottam Das Thakur. And when Narottam Das Thakur entered the room, he looked at Chandra Rai. And just by Narottam Das Thakur's glance, the ghost in the body of that demon began to speak very loudly so that everyone could hear. He said, "Due to my abominable sins, I have the gruesome karma of having to live in the body of this grotesque demon, Chandra Rai. It's abominable. Please deliver me from this situation. It's my karma to be in him, and it's his karma for me to be in him." He said, "You are Krishna's devotee. Therefore, all the power of Krishna is with you. The village of Keturigram, I consider that to be non-different than Vrindavan itself, because it is there that you are performing your devotional service. I pray, free me from this ghostly existence and let me take birth in any way, in any form, in any shape, in the village of Keturigram, where I will have association with you and your devotees." Then Narottam Das Thakur exclaimed in a grave voice, "Ghost, leave this body at once." Immediately he left. And Chandra Rai, his heart melted by the compassion of Krishna's devotee, wept unending tears and fell at the lotus feet of Narottam Das Thakur, begging forgiveness for all his sins and begging for mercy. At that moment, his brother Santosh, who was equally as demonic as him and his father, they all fell at the feet of Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur then instructed them in the science of devotional service. how they had to give up all their sinful activities, how they had to strictly follow all the regulative principles of Vaishnavism. He described to them the glories of the eternal soul as being the eternal servant of Krishna. He described to them the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and the chanting of the holy names. They were so transformed. Narottam Das Thakur, after a few days, told them to go take a bath in the river. They took their bath in the river, and Narottam Das Thakur spoke the sacred mantra into their ears. He gave them initiation into the Radha Krishna mantra. Then when he was about to leave, they offered him such gifts. They offered him villages, they offered him homes, they offered him all kinds of wealth, everything. They even made 10 beautiful decorated boats for him to go across the river. And when he was about to leave, they were suffering such pangs of separation. They begged, "Let us go with you. We have nothing else in our life except you." So they all went back to Ketarigram. And when they saw Narottam Das Thakur and the association of his devotees, their hearts melted in ecstasy. Devidas, one of the very, very stalwart disciples of Narottam Das Thakur, began a kirtan. And as he was singing and dancing, Narottam Das Thakur himself entered the kirtan and started singing. At that point, Chandra Rai and his family just fell to the floor in love of God. They had attained the perfection of life. Each day they would hear Narottam Das Thakur and Ramchandra Kaviraj give Harikatha. They would listen in rapt attention. They stayed there for weeks and weeks and weeks. And ultimately, Narottam Das Thakur sent them back to their homes. Now Chandra Rai, the king of all dacoits, had become a humble, gentle Vaishnava, simply wanting to serve and help others by giving them Krishna. One king, he was actually a Nawab, was very envious of Chandra Rai, because Chandra Rai never gave him any taxes. And he always feared Chandra Rai because he was so powerful. But one day some spies saw that he became very gentle in his behavior, so the king wanted to exploit that. And when he was in the Ganges, the king sent a force of army to capture Chandra Rai and bring him back. The king was angry as fire. He said, "Why you never paid your taxes? Why you're so cruel? Why you're such a demoniac personality? You will be punished." Then he told his guards, "Beat him!" And then he asked Chandra Rai, he said, "If you give me a big enough bribe, I will be lenient with you." But Chandra Rai said, "I will give you whatever expenses I owe you." He said, "Whatever you want, I'll give you." But the king was heartless. So he decided even worse than beating him is to imprison him until death. So what they did is they put him in a prison cell underground, where there was no proper air even to breathe. It was constantly pitch dark. No possibility of escaping. And every now and then people would come down and beat him and just let him lay there. He wasn't even given any food to eat. He was suffering terribly. When his father heard this news, he was in so much lamentation that he put news out that anyone who can free my son from his suffering, I will give him villages, wealth, and anything they want. So one mystic came and said, "You give me what I want, I guarantee you I will liberate him." So one day, Chandra Rai was in this pitch dark underground prison cell, meditating on Krishna, chanting the holy names of the Lord, and praying at the lotus feet of his spiritual master. That's what he did 24 hours a day. But one day, all of a sudden, the prison cell, one of the walls broke open, and this mystic yogi just came out. And he was in the cell with him. So Chandra Rai asked, "Who are you and how did you get here?" He said, "Your father sent me. Your father is bereaved in anxiety over your condition. He has sent me here to deliver you. You'll never understand how I got here by digging tunnels underground. It is only by the mercy of Goddess Kali. And the only way you can get out through these tunnels is you have to constantly chant this mantra to Goddess Kali. I will now whisper it in your ear." Ha! You want to whisper a mantra to Goddess Kali in my ear? No! Get out from this place! I was deeply condemned in the ocean of sinful activities. It was Srila Narottam Das Thakur who came to deliver me. He has given me shelter of the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. He is my savior. He has picked me up from the filth of material existence and situated me in devotional service. I am in no anxiety here, because I know I deserve millions of times worse punishment for what I have done. But I am living a blissful life here, because I'm remembering the mercy of my spiritual master. My Guru Maharaj has given me a mantra. Therefore, I can never accept a mantra from any other person. It is Narottam Das Thakur who has rescued me from material existence, and I can never be unchaste to him. Get out from here and tell my father that the only anxiety I have in my life is separation from Narottam Das Thakur, my beloved Gurudev. The man was shocked and he left. After some time, the king, he was frustrated because he was expecting some sort of bribe. In India, everyone gives bribes. So he called Chandra Rai and he said, "We are starving you, we're torturing you, and you don't even mind. You don't even offer me a bribe. I don't understand. Therefore, I have to kill you today. Today you are sentenced to death by being trampled upon by a mad elephant." So he declared a public execution. All the people of the town were there. There was Chandra Rai. His hands were tied up, his legs were tied up. He was just laying on the ground helplessly. And then this gigantic, mad, violent elephant came charging at him and picked up Chandra Rai and threw him at distance and slammed him to the ground. The whole while, Chandra Rai was just meditating on his Guru Maharaj's mercy. "I deserve worse than this. Let me always remember the holy name. Guru Maharaj, please, your mercy is all I'm made of." Then the elephant came charging at again, this time with the will to end his life. And as he came to trample, Chandra Rai somehow or other released his hands and grabbed the elephant's trunk and pulled it from its body. The elephant was bleeding profusely, screaming in pain, fell to the ground, dead. The king was amazed. He thought, this is not an ordinary person. So he embraced Chandra Rai and had him sit on a seat next to his, and looked at him and said, "How did you do that? That was a mad elephant. How did you pull his trunk and kill it?" He said, "I didn't do it. My Guru Maharaj did it, Narottam Das Thakur." He said, when the elephant was attacking me, I was simply praying for the mercy of my Guru Maharaj. And by his strength, he saved my life. And let me tell you something else. Although you didn't feed me any food, because I was always chanting the holy names according to the mantra that my Guru Maharaj gave me, I never felt hungry. And my father sent a mystic tantric to save me. But I would not accept any mantra from anyone after my Guru Maharaj gave me my mantra. So I sent him away. The king was absolutely shocked to hear. His heart transformed. He called a royal horse and gave it as a gift, plus a decorative turban, and told Chandra Rai, you are free to go home, and any facilities that you want, I will provide for you. So Chandra Rai didn't go home. He went right to Khetri Gram, to the ashram of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. And there he surrendered to him. Narottam Das Thakur and Ramchandra Kaviraj were so very, very worried about this man. They were praying for him. They were sending different influential people to try to somehow or other get him free. When he finally came, they embraced him and wept tears of affection. And then he sent a letter to his father and brother that you should all come here to meet Narottam Das Thakur. So they all came together. Chandra Rai said to Narottam Das Thakur that you are my only hope, you are my only shelter. You have saved me. Then he turned to his father and chastised him. You know my devotion to my Guru Maharaj. He said, why did you send that tantric yogi to help me? You should be ashamed of yourself. Raghavendra Rai begged forgiveness. And he said, the only pain I felt was separation from my Gurudev. And then in Khetri Gram, all together with the Vaishnavas, they performed Nam Sankirtan. This is forbearance. This is Vaishnav, willing to tolerate and forgive in the service of Sri Guru and Gauranga. Another essential virtue that must be imbibed by a Vaishnav is control of the senses. Unless we can control our senses, there is no question of making advancement in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada would often say, yoga means to control the mind and senses. Srila Prabhupada would often condemn various yogis who came to America and said, you just chant this mantra or perform this asanas, and there's no need to change your lifestyle. One very, very, very famous yogi, he was meeting Prabhupada. He was one of the most popular in America. He met Prabhupada and he said, Swamiji, I can't believe what you have done. He said, I'm teaching asanas and pranayama and meditation, and I'm teaching people how to be peaceful. But to give up their sinful activities, these American and European people, it's impossible. But you're getting them to give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating. You're getting them to completely surrender to Krishna. It's incredible. You're actually giving them the highest perfection. I thought it was impossible. He was praising Prabhupada like anything. And Prabhupada said to him, if you know that it is the conclusion of the scriptures to give up sinful activities and surrender to Krishna, why are you cheating all these people in the name of yoga? Prabhupada was very strong. Bhagavad Gita teaches us Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna shamudbhava mahashano mahapapma vidyanami habaranam. It is lust only that is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world, later transformed into wrath. Krishna tells us in Gita that we must control all the senses on all sides by the mind. Indriyanam hicharatam yanmano nabadiyate tarasya harati pragya vayu navami bambasi. Even one of the senses in which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence, just like a ship on the sea can be cast away by a strong wind. Bhagavad Gita says that lust burns like fire. It's all devouring. And it is the desire for sense gratification, gross and subtle, that keep a living entity bound to this material existence, birth after birth after birth. Prabhupada would say that sense gratification and Krishna consciousness go ill together. He gave the example that devotional service is like pure ghee under the fire of devotion. If you put water in ghee, they will never mix. It will cause explosions. So similarly, sense gratification can never mix with Krishna consciousness. And of all sense gratification, maituna agar, the greatest shackle in this world that keeps us bound to suffering is sex life. Yehi samsparaja jabhoga dukha jonayevate adyantavanta konte anate shudamate buddha. The temporary pleasures of this world are the sources of misery that keep us bound into this world of illusion. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught through his devotee Ramananda Rai the extreme extent of purity and the capacity to control the senses. This took place when a great Brahmin scholar named Pradyumna Mishra came to Lord Chaitanya in Puri and said, "Can you please tell me about Krishna?" Lord Chaitanya, so humble, he said, "Actually, I do not know anything about Krishna. But Ramananda Rai, he is expert. He is my teacher on Harikatha. You should go to him." So he went to the home of Ramananda Rai. And while he was there, the servant told him to wait. And he asked the servant, "What is Ramananda Rai doing?" And he told him what he was doing, which really surprised Pradyumna Mishra. Anyways, after many hours, Ramananda Rai came. It was already the end of the day. And as a refined gentleman, Vaishnav, he greeted him. He offered his obeisances to him. He said, "I'm sorry, but honestly, my servant never told me that you're here. How can I serve you?" Pradyumna Mishra said, "It's late now. It's time for me to go." So the next morning he went to Lord Chaitanya. And he said, "Did you hear Harikatha from Ramananda Rai?" He said, "No. Why not?" "You know what he was doing the whole day? There's this play called Jagannath Vallabha Nataka that he wrote for the pleasure of Jagannath. And beautiful young girls called Devi Dasis. He was training them to perform that drama before Lord Jagannath. He was training them to dance, to exhibit various symptoms of ecstasy, in order to present them before Jagannath nicely. He would bathe them. He would massage scented oils on them, every parts of their body. He would dress them." Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also explained in further detail Ramananda Rai's service to Lord Jagannath. He said, if I even see a wooden form of a woman, my heart changes. But Ramananda Rai, he and only he could do this. How is it possible that he could do this? Lord Chaitanya said, because in his consciousness he is always situated in his original, eternal, spiritual form. Prabhupada tells us that in Goloka Vrindavan, Ramananda Rai is Vishakha. And this is her service, to prepare other gopis in every way to dance and sing and play instruments for the pleasure of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya said, even when he touches the various parts of the body of a woman, it's as if he's touching stone or wood. Because he has no passion, he has no material conceptions, he has no material desires. In a purest state of consciousness, he's simply offering his love to Krishna in everything he does. That day, Lord Chaitanya said, go hear from him. Don't miss this opportunity. So he went to Ramananda Rai, and all day he heard Harikatha. And at the end of the discussion, he told Ramananda Rai what Lord Chaitanya said about him. And Ramananda Rai said, actually, I'm a grihastha and I'm a sudra. In every sense, I'm the lowest. I don't know anything. My tongue is just like a stringed instrument, and Lord Chaitanya, it is he that is moving my tongue and making it speak. Otherwise, I can do nothing. So then he went to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya asked, did you hear Harikatha from Ramananda Rai? And Pradyumna Mishra said, yes, I have heard. There is nothing that can compare. But he said it was you speaking through him, that he's just a grihastha and a sudra. And Lord Chaitanya said, I'm a Mayavadi sannyasis. What do I know about these types? So it is the nature of the Lord to glorify his devotees, and the nature of the devotees to glorify and give all credit to the Lord. Param drisvani vartate. If we experience the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, of real devotion, then the lower tastes of material sense gratification can be overcome. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, the process by which we can overcome Maya is to keep our mind and senses constantly engaged in devotional service. Idle mind is devil's workshop. So we must struggle and strive. Tani saravani samyamya yukta asita matpara vasehi asyandriyani thasi pragya pratishtata. That one who restrains his senses from the objects and fixes consciousness on Krishna, that person is a man of steady intelligence. Haridas Thakur, even when Maya herself came to seduce him, he was not disturbed because his mind was always fixed in Krishna consciousness, chanting the holy names. The last subject, humility, which was represented by Sanatan Goswami, we will speak in another class another day. Because everyone wants to hear you. I'm getting all these notes that get off that asana, Maharaj. We want to hear Bhakti Charu Swami. That's what these notes say. But that subject takes some time. If I was humble, I could do it in 10 minutes. But because I have no humility, for me to try to discuss humility, it will take some hours of theoretical information. He wants me to give a crash course. I will give crash course.
that if anyone wants to understand the true essence of humility, you should carefully observe the characteristics of Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj. Sanatan Goswami is empowering him with this quality.
The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on February 24, 2002 in Pune.
Hare Krishna. I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to speak to all of you again today. Yesterday, we were discussing the very important subject of Vaishnava qualities and how four very essential qualities were taught by Lord Chaitanya through four of his very specially empowered devotees. He taught simplicity through Damodar Pandit. He taught forbearance through Srila Haridas Thakur. He taught the world the need to control the senses and the mind from the temporary objects of this world through Srila Ramananda Rai. And he taught humility through Srila Sanatan Goswami. Now these great personalities exhibited these qualities to an extent that is only possible for them. The devotee by nature is humble. A devotee never aspires to take a high position, to imitate great souls. A devotee with all humility wants to strive to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. Today we are discussing the quality of humility. As Srila Prabhupada has explained it, and various aspects which comprise the humility of a devotee. It is most essential to understand this subject. Perhaps the most important subject in all of creation. Because bhakti and humility can never be separated from each other. Just like sweetness is in sugar, just like liquidity is in water, it is the constitutional, inseparable nature. Similarly, the quality of someone with devotion is very prominently existing in a state of real, genuine humility. It is one of the most difficult, esoteric subjects in all of the world. Because the concept of humility literally defies all the laws of material nature. It really cannot be understood with mundane intelligence. Real humility can only be understood by the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is false humility, and there is real humility. And in between, there is the genuine desire to strive for real humility. It is such a thing that when we behave in a humble way and think of ourselves to be very humble, we become very proud of our humility. And then we consider ourselves to be better than others.
This person is very proud. But see how I am talking. See how I am speaking. I'm very humble.
Such thinking process means that we are victims of false pride, which is contrary to the principle of real humility. Real humility is a natural state of consciousness. Real humility comes through purification of the heart. But as sadhana bhaktas, we must practice the principles of humility with an earnest and genuine desire for humility. And by doing so, we can actually achieve the grace of the Lord, the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. Then we can actually realize what is humility. We have seen devotees competing to see who is more humble. Sometimes through words, sometimes through physical fighting. Who can get the other's dust of feet? And whoever wins is more humble. And whoever breaks the most people's legs in doing so, he is the champion of humility. So certainly these sentiments are nice, providing our actual aspiration is nice. Our ideal that we aspire for in life is actually the substance of our real character. We may not have what we want, the great treasure of humility and devotion, if we try to pretend for honor and respect that we are humble, that we have great devotion, then it's a very, very long process. But if actually we feel that we have none, and we strive for it, and struggle for it, and beg for it, then only it is given. Opposites attract one another in the sense of magnetic forces. What is magnetism? It's really attraction. If a piece of metal is clean, it will immediately attract it. If the metal is filthy and dirty, then although potentially that metal is attracted, but it's not being attracted because it's covered. So we find that the negative pole of the magnet attracts the positive pole, and the positive pole the negative. So Krishna is all attractive. He is the supreme great. If we think that we are great, then we go farther and farther away from Krishna. If we think that we are insignificant, that we are nothing, then we are naturally attracted to Krishna. What is keeping us between Krishna, the subtlemost of all the layers of material conditioning that is covering our pure love of Krishna, is ahankar, the false ego. And all the other layers of material conditioning are built upon that false ego. And what is the false ego? I want to be honored. I want to be respected. I want to acquire and possess. Why? Because I am the enjoyer. The whole material creation is built upon the foundation of the false ego. If the false ego collapses, all of our material conditioning is vanquished. If we do everything else, we control our senses, we live with nothing and poverty,
if we think we're great, if we think we are the doers of our activities, then we are still strongly bound by material bondage. Humility means, in its true sense, to actually be free of the influence of the false ego. Janasya moho yamaham mameti. False ego means I am the proprietor, I am this body, I am the enjoyer. Real ego, I'm the eternal soul. I'm part of Krishna. Jivera swarupoi krishnera nityadas. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. I have no other claim, I have no other position, I have no other desire than to serve. It is the most difficult thing to do in this material world, to actually be really humble. And we will be tested. Really, Krishna has created material existence in such a way, specifically to crush our egoistic propensities through various miseries. And to actually become humble. But it is not possible to learn our lesson properly without association of those great souls who actually have understood what is the real meaning of humility. Srila Prabhupada explains that the beginning of all knowledge comes through humility. Without humility, you can have no knowledge. What kind of knowledge are they talking about? Gyan and vigyan. Realized knowledge. Actual understanding. There is knowing things through your intelligent inclinations of the brain. Prabhupada explains that some people have tremendous amount of intellectual prowess in their brains that comes from karma. But that's not where real knowledge is understood. Real knowledge is in the heart. When that theoretical knowledge is actually practically applied in our life, we get realization. But theoretical knowledge cannot touch the heart unless there is humility. Therefore, the very beginning of the spiritual process is to humble oneself. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, without humility, transcendental knowledge is simply impossible. And the Lord has given many examples. We will discuss these various aspects of humility as they were demonstrated in the lives of great personalities. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, but he appeared in the role of his devotee. Why? To teach us how a devotee should live. Therefore, all understandings of all the principle of knowledge are demonstrated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's own life, and he empowered his devotees to do the same. What was the qualification of Arjuna? As long as he thought that he knew the answers to the problems that he was facing, Krishna remained silent. We see in first chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is doing all the talking. Krishna is simply patiently waiting. Just like the two birds and the tree that are described in Upanishads. One bird is just watching. Other bird is trying to solve the problems of life. The problem is we want to be happy. material world, sometimes we take a fruit that's bitter and we suffer, and sometimes we get a street fruit and we're happy. But we're never satisfied within. The Paramatma bird is simply waiting. When are you going to turn to me? When Arjuna frustrated himself with all of his speculative ideas, even though they were based on Shastra, they were based on proper social understanding of Varnashram, nothing he said was wrong. But his attitude was not humble, was not submissive. He didn't come to the conclusion that I do not know anything. The more you think you know, the less you can learn. The less you think you know, the more you can understand. Therefore, the greatest scholars in spiritual subject matters feel that they know nothing. They're simply trying to be humble instruments. Arjuna was really humble. So humble that his mouth was parched with dryness. His entire body became pale. His limbs were trembling. And with tears flowing from his eyes, he said, Karpanya doso pahata subhava purishchami tvam dharma samudacheha. Krishna, I don't know anything. I don't know what is to be done, what is not to be done. I'm bewildered. I'm confused. I am your disciple. You are my spiritual master. Please instruct me. This was not a formality. This was not a matter of curiosity. This is a desperate matter of his survival. We should want to hear from the great souls, understanding our condition, drowning in this ocean of material existence. To learn from them is a matter of our survival. That is how we should approach spiritual masters. That is how we should approach the Vaishnavas and the holy scriptures. If we study simply because we want to be learned and have other people see that I'm a very great pundit, I'm a great scholar, I'm spiritually advanced. Yeyatamam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajamam. Krishna will reward you. He'll make you a famous scholar. He'll have millions of people touch the dust of your feet. You'll have all kinds of dakshinas and all nice gifts. But inside, you'll be in utter poverty. Krishna told Arjuna, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadengshatite jnanam jnaninastata darshana. Beginning of knowledge. First, you have to accept a submissive condition. What does it mean to be submissive? It's not an artificial show. Nothing in the scriptures of the Bhakti Shastras discuss artificial shows. It's talking about a state of heart. To be submissive means to consider yourself inferior, to consider others superior. Not to be blinded by materialistic conceptions. Arjuna was a great warrior, intimate friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna did not speak to him till he felt he was the most insignificant. When you feel yourself insignificant, you become submissive. That's the beginning. A devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, I want to give up everything. Srila Prabhupada said, what do you have to renounce? Everything belongs to Krishna. You are simply insignificant. That is our position. That was Arjuna's realization. So the first principle of transcendental knowledge is to submit oneself and then to inquire in a humble state of mind. And then to render service. We find the whole process is humility. The grandson of Arjuna, he also lived by this principle. Two most important bhakti shastras were based on the principle of humility. Arjuna humbled himself before Krishna and he spoke Bhagavad Gita to the world. Maharaj Parikshit. When he approached Sukadeva Goswami, he didn't say, "I am the king of all the planet Earth and I renounced everything for the purpose of self-realization." That's what he did, actually. But what was he thinking in his heart? He prayed to Shukadeva Goswami that he was a Kshatriya Bandhu. He was an unqualified fallen so-called Kshatriya. He presented himself to Shukadeva Goswami that, "I don't know anything. I don't know the purpose of life. I don't know the duty of a man about to die. Although I was put in this position as king, I'm not worthy to be called a descendant of Arjuna and Yudhisthira and these great souls. I'm unqualified, disqualified. I'm very fallen. I'm very lonely. Please save me." That was his attitude. And thus, he was receptive for transcendental knowledge. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the part of a devotee to teach the world. When he approached his spiritual master, he describes this to Prakashananda Saraswati. He said that when I approached my Guru Maharaj told me that you are a great fool. You have no right to study the Vedanta philosophy. You're unqualified. You should simply chant the holy names of Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approached his spiritual master in the mood of a great fool. And he was very, very happy to admit to others what a fool he was in the presence of his spiritual master. When Lord Chaitanya went to Ramkeli, he met Sri Rupan Sanatan, the classic example of how to accept knowledge. Rupan Sanatan was a prime minister, chief minister of the entire kingdom. Most learned scholars, multi-billionaires, they had all material opulences, more than anyone in the world today. And yet, when they approached Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they had straw between their teeth. When you put straw between your teeth, that's a sign of utter defeat. When you want to beg mercy from someone, you put straw between your teeth. They fell on the ground, weeping and crying in oceans of humility. They were too humble to even stand up. And this was genuine. Mahaprabhu had to lift them up. And then they offered such prayers that we are the most sinful, the most abominable, the most fallen, the most wretched. You will not find in the entire creation of Brahma anyone more abominable than us. We're more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. Although Jagai and Madhai may have committed every type of sinful activities, they were Brahmins from Navadvip, and they never served Malechas and Yovanas. But our life has simply been spent menial servants of Malechas and Yavanas carrying out their orders. Therefore, we are the most despicable. We have no qualifications to receive your mercy. But you are our only hope. For us to expect your mercy is like a small dwarf expecting to touch the moon with his hand. But still, you are Patita Pavan Avatar. You have descended to deliver the most fallen. And we believe that your glory for this incarnation will really be fulfilled if you give your mercy to us due to our fallen condition. This is how they approach their spiritual master. This is how they approach the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada explains that it wasn't imitation. It wasn't ritualistic. It wasn't a formality. It was the genuine expression of their heart. How is this possible? Rupa and Sanatan never committed a sinful activity in their entire life, and they're considering themselves the most sinful. Rupa and Sanatan, the only reason they took the post of the ministers of the Nawab Hussein Shah was a service to society so the Nawab would not persecute and torture the devotees. But they considered that they were in that situation simply due to their great passion for position and power and wealth. This is the inconceivable nature of a Vaishnava. They were the most learned scholars. When Sanatana Goswami approached Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Varanasi, he fell at his feet. He said, I'm the most fallen, the most sinful, and I'm totally ignorant. And the worst thing is because I know some scriptures, people call me a learned pundit, and I am such a cheater that I believe them. But I don't know who I am, or where I'm going, or why I'm suffering these threefold miseries of material existence. Therefore, falling in an ocean of lamentation, I'm begging you, please instruct me. Thus, Srila Prabhupada says, humility is the beginning of knowledge. And without humility, knowledge of this absolute truth is simply impossible. And according to our humility, according to our submissiveness, Krishna and the great souls are inclined to bestow their mercy and reveal the highest truths to us. We read about that Rupa Kaviraj. He was blessed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Guru's godbrother, by his own instructing guru, Sri Krishna Charan Chakravarti. He was given so much wisdom, so much knowledge. And then the most intimate associate and disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Mukundadas, bestowed so much kindness, love, and transcendental knowledge upon him. But then he became proud. And he offended Krishna Priya Devi, the daughter of Ganga Narayan Chakravarti. And because of that offense, he became totally bewildered. He still had all this knowledge in his head, but no understanding, no realization. He used all that incredible knowledge he was given by others to concoct a bogus, cheating philosophy to guide other people to hell. He had everything but humility. And therefore, everything became null and void from the spiritual point of view. Rupa Sanatan Goswamis, we cannot imitate them. How they could have so much, be so great, and think themselves so small. That should be our goal of life, to think like them. Not to achieve some high position where people will honor us. Srila Prabhupada, he describes how he began the process of transcendental knowledge by being defeated by his Guru Maharaj.
This is in the line of Rupa and Sanatan. At number 1 Ultadonga Junction Road in Calcutta, Srila Prabhupada first met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada told Srila Prabhupada, before he even got up from his obeisances, "You are intelligent, young man. Take this message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spread it throughout the world in the English language." Srila Prabhupada was in the role of Arjuna. He presented so many arguments that we are dependent, and every one of his arguments would be thoroughly accepted by everyone in the entire country of India except one man. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That we're a dependent nation. First we should assist Gandhiji in getting freedom from the British rule. No, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. All these political changes are always taking place. The eternal reality is devotion to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada would regularly tell his disciples with such a glad heart, "I was defeated by my Guru Maharaj. And I was very happy." This was Srila Prabhupada's pride, that he was defeated by his Guru Maharaj. What does that mean? That means he was proud of his Guru. He was eternally grateful to be in a subordinate position to his spiritual master. And in an ocean of humility, every word that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke, Srila Prabhupada accepted as his life and soul. Thus, the first principle of humility Srila Prabhupada teaches, that it is the essential beginning on the path of bhakti, the essential beginning for transcendental knowledge. Srila Prabhupada also defines humility from another point of view, that humility means to not be anxious to find the satisfaction of being honored by others. This seems quite impossible, does it not? But this is humility. Prithu Maharaj in Srimad Bhagavatam, he came out of the body of Maharaj Vena with his consort Arachi. And the great sages and rishis and brahmins began to offer beautiful prayers to him as an avatar of the Lord. And Prithu wouldn't listen to a single word they said. He said, "Why are you saying all these false prayers? I haven't done anything yet. I just got here." Now, for the rest of us, we're very eager to take credit for things we haven't done. And we're very, very much adamant that no one should blame us for something that we didn't do, or even something that we did do. This is human nature. We want to take credit for what we haven't done. And we want to give the blame to others for things that we have done. Factually, according to Gita, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasya ahankara vimudatma karatah iti manyate. Anything good, you didn't do it. Krishna has empowered you. So why should we take credit? But still, there is that deep thirst to be honored by others. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur graphically taught how we should see the process of being honored by others. He said the desire for pratishta, for honor and recognition, a devotee should see it as abominable as the stool of a boar. For those of you who have analytically studied the nature of stool, there is nothing worse than a boar stool.
devotee eats prasad and he passes stool. So that's somehow coming from prasad. But still, we consider it abominable. Now, a boar eats other people's stool. And that becomes stool. How much would any of you like for lunch today? A big bowl full of boar stool. But we're eager to eat that stuff 24 hours a day. Because the honor and the respect that we try to enjoy is more abominable than boar stool for the soul. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was living in Puri, he was heavily chastised and criticized by Ramchandra Puri. Ramchandra Puri was saying about Lord Chaitanya that he's a bogus sannyasi, he's a sense enjoyer, he's a hypocrite. He pretends to be very renounced, but in secret places he's enjoying sense gratification. The devotees were outraged. But Lord Chaitanya, he said, no, what he is saying is correct. I should cut my prasadam taking in half. He's like my father. He's my well-wisher. He's teaching me very nice things. He didn't defend himself when he was attacked. He was humble. Madhavendra Puri, he could not tolerate being honored and respected. We know the story from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. He would actually run and hide when people would try to honor him. When Gopinath stole the kheer for him, it became public information. Everyone in Orissa was thinking, who is this Madhavendra Puri that Gopinath has stole kheer for? He must be such a great soul. They were going to honor him. They were going to have a festival for him in Remuna. So what did he do without saying anything to anyone? He secretly disappeared. And everywhere he went, people had heard about him. So he would just keep hiding and disappearing. Until finally he came to Puri. And even in Jagannath Puri they heard his glories. When he went to the Jagannath temple, somehow or other they found out he was Madhavendra Puri. And then he was thinking, somehow or other, if I can use this honor and respect in Thakurji's service, then there's some value. So they were willing to do anything for the great Madhavendra Puri. If you so desire, some sandalwood, some camphor. So he wanted no honor for himself. But when it came, he was willing to accept it only for the purpose of devotional service, not for himself. Similarly, Rupan Sanatan Goswami, when that great Digvijay Pandit Rupa Narayan came to Vrindavan, this man was such an egomaniac. He traveled throughout all of India defeating people in debate, and they had to sign his Vijay Patra. Whole list of all the pundits he defeated. And you know how hard it was for those pundits to sign their names? That means discredit. They were defeated. So he went to Rupa and Sanatan, hearing that they were the greatest scholars of Vrindavan. And they very humbly, meekly said to Rupa Narayan, actually, this is all propaganda. We're not very learned. We're no match for you. We don't even want to waste your time. We're insignificant in our scholarship in relationship to you. Just give us the Vijay Patra and we will sign it. They signed it. They didn't care what people thought about them. They had no desire for honor or prestige. They were humble. But Jiva Goswami, he was also equally humble. But to defend Rupan Sanatan's prestige, he was willing to have debate and defeated him. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, great crest jewels of humility, who had no anxiety to find the satisfaction of being honored by others. When all the Vaishnavas blessed Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami to write Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, they knew that this would be the classic literature for all time to come, describing the glories of the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, which one of you here today would find satisfaction in being somewhere in that book? For all time to come, you're seen as an intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya. When Kaviraj Goswami was taking blessings from every devotee, Gopal Bhatt Goswami and Lokanath Goswami both said, "We will give you blessings under one condition. You do not mention our names or say anything about us." That was their humility. They were two of the most prominent, topmost Vaishnavas in all of Braj Bhumi. But they wanted no honor, no respect, no prestige, no reputation. They simply wanted to serve. But in their hearts, they actually felt that they were disqualified to be spoken of in the same book as Lord Chaitanya and his other associates. They felt ashamed to be identified with the association of such persons as Rupa and Sanatan. This is humility. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he emphasized more than anything else, Trinarapi sunichena taror iba sahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that this is the Siddha Pranali mantra for the Gaudiya Mat. By understanding the depths of this verse and applying it to our life, the eternal Leela of Vrindavan, our eternal relationship with Krishna in Vrindavan, will be revealed. Srila Prabhupada explains very emphatically on many occasions why Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur instituted this particular type of sannyas into the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Please try to understand. Sometimes people want to take sannyas so that they'll get prestige and honor as being something great. But actually, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur established sannyas for a very different reason. From the time of Sri Rupa and Sanatan, the highest order in the Gaudiya Math was the Paramhamsa Babaji stage. And this was followed by such great souls as Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. They dressed in the simple robes of Paramhamsa. See, there's four stages of sannyas. There's Kutichak, Bahudak, Parivrajakacharya, and Paramhamsa. Paramhamsa is the state of the highest realization and liberation. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he saw with his eyes that practically the whole sampradaya coming from the Lord, the so-called Babajis or Paramhamsas, were addicted to all kinds of sense gratification and misconceptions. They were cheating people. Srila Prabhupada, while describing this reality, he said to the devotees, "You know Gopinath Bazaar? You go to Gopinath Bazaar in Vrindavan. You will find so many Paramhamsa Babajis smoking bidis. Not only that, but there is a bidi shop where the Babajis are making bidis, manufacturing them so that they can get money to smoke more bidis.
And he said at Radha Kund, so many of these Paramhamsa Babajis are having illicit sex with women, and taking intoxications. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not want to associate his leaders with these types of people. And he was thinking that Gaur Kishor Das Babaji Maharaj, he was a genuine, real Paramhamsa. He was Babaji. And Thakur Bhakti Vinod, at the final stage of his life, he accepted the Paramhamsa Vesha Babaji. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so humble. He felt, I cannot accept the same role that they did. I cannot. This is what Prabhupada describes. Therefore, he took a lower form of sannyas, Parivrajakacharya. For two reasons. One is so that we would not be identified with the bogus Paramhamsas. And most of all, that we should take a humble position. Sannyas means a humble position. It's within the Varnashram circle. So he established the Tridanda as an expression of humility and for the purpose of keeping all people in his Gaudiya Mat, in the renounced order, in a humble position. That is humility. Not wanting honor, wanting service. He told us that this Tridanda means body, mind, words, and life exclusively in the spirit of service to Krishna and his devotees. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was sitting on Vyasasan during his Vyas Puja, there's a famous lecture he gave. He said that he feels like a dog sitting on that Vyasasan. What you must all be thinking, this brute, this animal, sitting in a higher position than the rest of us. So humble. He expressed, it is only for your benefit. I may be the most fallen, but somehow you have asked me to represent Vyasadeva, so I am sitting here. He didn't want honor. He only wanted service. Srila Prabhupada was in that spirit. In 1972 in New Vrindavan, I remember, he was saying the same message during his Vyas Puja, that you people may be thinking, why is this man sitting in this high position, accepting so much honor and so many gifts? He said, it's not for me. We're simply the humble representative, servant of all others. That was Prabhupada's mood. And he proved it. When he was in Australia, people were saying very critical words against him from the audience because he was sitting on a high, nicely upholstered seat. So the next day he told the devotees, I'll sit on the floor and give my katha. The devotees said, "Wah." He said, no, people are not appreciating this. I will sit on the floor. What does that mean? Srila Prabhupada was only taking the position not to be honored, not to be respected, but simply to serve. Whatever was the best position for him to be in, to render humble service to the conditioned souls and to his spiritual master, that was the position he would take. Amanina manadena. He did not want any honor, no respect. If you want honor, you don't deserve honor. If you don't want honor, you deserve honor. Who can understand this philosophy? Materially, it's so contradictory and inconceivable. Srila Prabhupada explains. Please listen carefully. If one acts and speaks in a very humble fashion, but that person does not show respect to Krishna,
to the spiritual master and to all Vaishnavas, then that is simply a false show of humility. Another quality of humility, Prabhupada explains, that if one actually has a real relationship with Krishna, then that devotee will feel within his or her heart that they do not even have a single drop of love for Krishna. If you think you have love for Krishna, to that extent, your relationship with Krishna is very far away. This was exhibited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. While living in Navadvip, one day he was walking along the bank of the Ganga, and some materialistic people began to criticize the path of devotional service. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu walked away from them and went to the house of Srivas Thakur, where he said, "I have just heard criticism of Krishna and his devotees. Purify my heart by beginning Harinam Sankirtan." They began to chant. Mahaprabhu stopped the kirtan and said, "I feel no love in my heart." And ultimately, he just ran out the door, jumped in the Ganges, went underwater to take his own life. Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu, seeing his condition, he was weeping, he was crying, he just ran to the Ganges to end his life. They jumped in after him, one grabbed his hair, one grabbed his feet, and somehow or other they took the beautiful form of Lord Gauranga and placed him on the bank of the Ganga.